Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the Internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to The Bigger Picture with Michael Rakeer. I haven't had Michael on the show, it seems like forever. If you're not familiar with his work, get over to josephspeaks.com. Today, of course, we'll be fielding some questions from the audience, and we'll be discussing things out of his latest book, From Here to Infinity. So let me say good morning to Michael. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Maria.
How are you doing?
Good to be with you again.
It's always fun, but it seems like it's been about 6 months.
November, I think, was it?
Well, it's been a long time to me because there's so much that happens in between the space of when we talk to each other that it just feels like we're living 10 years every month. But it's good to have you back. I was reviewing From Here to Infinity yesterday, and I had forgotten how wonderful this book is and what a great breather it is to take a break from the news and actually talk about things that matter.
Indeed.
Yeah, but I do have some questions from listeners. I thought we'd kick off with that before we get into some of my own questions. The first few are from Pat. She's read Transmission, and she's wondering what to do about health and death. She said, in Transmission, it says we have too many machines and drugs keeping our bodies alive, when in fact our spirit is ready to leave the physical. She says, but if someone we love is very ill, is it best for us to just let nature take its course or try to help them with doctor-given options?
It would be great, wouldn't it, if we had doctors and nurses who shared our view. And I think that's the ideal situation, that such circumstances should be reviewed by, obviously, the patient's relatives, but also by doctors and nurses who understand and who are keeping an eye on the physical, but also on the spiritual. I'm speaking from personal experience here. I lost my mother last year, and she went into a hospital because of a fall, and she was wrongly diagnosed, and as a result of that, her drugs were increased from 5 a day to 11 a day, and she was put through rigorous test after test after test, and I could see her going downhill. And unfortunately, I couldn't express my point of view to the doctor sufficiently for him to understand what I was trying to say. And what I was trying to say is, look, my mom is 84, she's tired, and this testing that's being done to her is killing her. Mm-hmm. There has to be an aspect of medicine that says we have to treat the spirit as well. And we have to treat the person with respect in old age. And that, to my mind, didn't happen. And with many patients, it's simply a matter of medicine going through a series of checklists and saying, well, we've done this, now we do that, now we do that, now we do that, with regard to the body, but no regard to the spiritual person that is within the body. Mm. And so I would love to see a time when we can consult one-to-one with doctors and nurses and say, well, how about the spiritual aspect? Is this person reaching the end of their life? And what is the best path to take because they're reaching the end of their life? How do we treat them with respect? At what point do we say, well, we are treating the body, but we're not treating the spirit? And that has got to come, I think. It has to come. It desperately needs to come because our hospitals are becoming sterile places where on many occasions we keep people going to the point where there's nothing there apart from a link to the physical. And the link to the physical is holding the person back from going to the spiritual realms that they should be in.
Right. Well, you know, here in the States, you can do what they call a living will. I know that my father had one in place, which was basically saying, you know, he didn't want to be kept alive on machines or any extreme care. And he wanted, you know, I remember him literally saying, I want to die with my dignity. And he was allowed to do that. In some of the states here now, you're also allowed to, that's what they call the movement, death with dignity, where instead of, you know, waiting for the hospitals to kill you, you can actually go in when you know you're terminal. There's nothing they can do. You're in aggravating pain, and have them help you die. And I think that I've always believed in that since I was a teenager. I always thought it made more sense. I mean, we put our dogs down when it's time. Why don't we do the same with humans? Why don't they have the same right?
Well, there's a point also, Maria, psychically, when we know if someone's going. I visited my mum in hospital, and that she'd been put on drugs that had taken her out of her mind. She was hallucinating, and she was rambling. And she was making no sense at all. And mentally, I said to her, Mom, are you dying? I need to know. And there was no spoken question between us. It was a mental question. And at that point, she stopped in her mid-hallucination, looked at me, said, yes, and then continued with the hallucination. So we know, don't we, that the patient knows, the relatives know, if we are tuning into our spiritual senses. And it would be great if we could have medicine knowing as well. There have to be doctors and nurses who are psychic. We're all psychic to a certain degree. There have to be doctors and nurses who have experiences, who see people, who see people standing next to the beds of people. And those doctors and nurses need to cultivate that experience and blend it with their medical knowledge so that they know when people can be cured and they know when it's time for people to move on.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would certainly be a wonderful thing. You know, I mean, I think about Carlos Castaneda. You know, he used to write about and talk about something called a death walker. And I don't know if you're familiar with that term or not, Michael.
But I'm not, normally.
But a death walker is somebody who is there with you while you're dying, who has the ability to take you through the tunnel and show you where you're going, lead you there, and then come back, of course, without you, and help you cross over. And I have met people that do that. You know, I myself did that with my mother and my sister when they were dying. And it certainly helps them know where they're going and gives them a sense of peace before they leave.
Yes.
And I mean,
Joseph said, sorry.
Go ahead. I'm just saying, you know, people dying in a hospital usually are dying horrific deaths with, like you said, with your mom, you know, having these wicked hallucinations and whatnot because of the drugs they're administering.
Yes, there are peaceful deaths that can come to people. We don't have to dispatch people in this way. We don't have to keep the physical alive at all costs. We've got to understand that we're spiritual beings as well. And quite rightly you say that Joseph talks about an equivalent, I suppose. It's the same thing as the death walker, and says that no one ever dies alone. Mm-hmm. How many times do people in hospital say, well, before my mom went or my dad went, they looked to the corner of the room and said, ah, hello, how are you? And talked about their brother or their sister or their father. No one ever dies alone. Someone comes for them and takes them to the other side. And we should recognize these signs. Before Jane's mum died, she talked about, much to my surprise, because she'd only just come into this area of what we do since Jane and myself got together. And I could see at the end of her bed a boat. I could see the boat that I recognized as a vehicle that takes people across. One of the guides that works with me used to take people across on what looks like a liner. In fact, it's a construct. It's an illusion. But it's there to make people feel comfortable as they make the transition from here on Earth to wherever they're supposed to be on the spiritual side of life. And I could see the boat sort of parked in a corner of the room. I didn't say anything to anybody, but Jane's mum said to me, what's that boat doing there? And she said, I'm not going on it yet.
Right.
But what's it doing there? And every time we went to see her, I could see that the boat had come closer. And I could see the guide concerned, saying, it's not yet, but I will take her across when the time is right. And of course he did so, and she went across. But her fear wasn't there. She'd seen this beautiful boat that she was going to go across on. And there are many constructs that are brought through by the guides to get us across. As Joseph explains, we very often need that mental journey to the other side. We can't instantly go from dying here to turning up there unless we're very spiritually aware. And so for most people, or for many people, there will be some form of journey expected, and that is what they go on. And there will be a boat comes for them, or there will be a plane comes for them, or there will be a bus or a taxi comes for them, and they are taken in that vehicle of imagination, of illusion, to the other side. And they expect that journey, and at the other end of the journey, they are then taken to the area, the vibration, the sphere that they have earned the right to live in because of having raised their vibrations during their life on Earth.
Exactly. Well, that's very well said. You know, recently I had the opportunity to spend the whole weekend with my 19-year-old granddaughter, and she was quizzing me on everything. I felt like I was going through a Mensa test, Michael. And at one point, she actually asked me, you know, what do you have in place for when you die? Do you have a will? Do you have this? What do you want? What do you want us to do with your body? And of course that led into what happens and all of that. And I was very matter of fact with her. I told her I've got everything taken care of, explained it all to her, because this is a conversation most families don't have. And I said, I've made it very easy for everybody to do whatever they need to do. I says, but one thing I'd like you to do, I know it's impossible to say, don't cry because I died. I said, just don't waste too much time on that, I said to her. Just be happy for me because I'm going home. But I also told her that I would be there for her when she's ready to go. I said, the first face you'll see will be mine. So you have nothing to worry about.
Yes, indeed.
And you know, talking to young people just matter of fact like that, give them the answers that they seek so they can have peace. Because I think one of the strongest fears most people have is death. Because let's face it, it is the ultimate unknown for a lot of people. But yes, I think this is something more families should talk about. But for whatever reason, people don't want to talk about it. I guess they think if they don't talk about it, it won't happen.
Absolutely. Particularly in the Western world, we seem to be afraid of talking about it. It's very sad, really. Yes, we need to bring death into the equation. And many of us think of death only when it's fast approaching and not in our younger years. How wonderful if we could examine that experience and take away that fear as we're growing up, in our teens, in our 20s, so that there is no fear of death. And there is an understanding that we are working towards that point from the point that we're born.
Right.
And the reason we're working towards that point is to elevate ourselves. That's what our life here is about, to become better today than we were yesterday, to become more filled with light today than we were yesterday, and to take back some of those experiences so that we can live in ever more blissful realms.
Mm-hmm.
Not the end of things, but the beginning of things. As you say, a return home, a return to a far better place than this is. And that's a wonderful message that isn't transmitted, isn't understood.
No.
It would be great. We have, there are certain events here called death cafes or death evenings, where people get together increasingly to talk about death, and I think that's a wonderful thing. You might have an undertaker, a funeral director, a doctor, a medium, someone who deals with death in some other way, and various philosophies are put forward.
Mm-hmm.
But in doing that, in getting together and having a cup of coffee and talking about that event, you open it up, you take away the fear, you take away the mystery from it. And that's got to be a wonderful thing.
Absolutely.
My teacher Joan always used to say, when older people were arguing, Don't include me in this argument. At your age, you should be preparing for the next place.
Right.
And that's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
As we run out of days here on Earth, we should tidy up the way that we approach people and approach ourselves, and shouldn't be investing time in anger or upset or causing irritation for other people, but should be investing more time in sending light out to people and examining our violent responses to the world and getting rid of them.
Right. Well,
getting
I think...
Getting them out of our system before we leave here.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, babies, when they're born into this world, come in crying and screaming. So I would think the death of being this all-powerful, gigantic, spiritual being and then finding yourself trapped in a little lump of physical flesh that's maybe 8 pounds is probably a very traumatic death from their perspective.
Yes, yes. Shutting themselves off from their spiritual family, shutting themselves off from their creative ability, shutting themselves off from their conscious link with God, shoehorning themselves, as you say, into this restrictive body, it makes you wonder why any of us come back. But of course we know why we come back, or Joseph tells us why we come back, because we become addicted to the ride. And what a ride it is.
Right.
And also because we haven't prepared ourselves on our return with the spiritual knowledge that we need to move forward. And that's another reason why we should look at death more often and regularly, to prepare ourselves for what is there, to open our minds to the possibilities of what lie ahead for us. And we don't do that. And so we're so restricted in our thinking, and we're so imprisoned in our thinking, that when we move over, when we make our transition, we refuse to see the wonderful vistas that are around us. We refuse to talk to the shining spirits that come to guide us, and we want to come back because that's what we're used to.
Right. Right. Well, you know, I have to tell you that I've been reading David Icke's latest book, The Phantom Self, and I'm very surprised reading through it that a lot of what he's had to say sounds very similar to certain things you have said and written about. He talks about other worlds. He talks about colors being brighter other places, how we're trapped here. And I wondered to myself, I said, I wonder if David started reading Michael's books. But it's
really, so. Nice.
It's really nice to see, though, that the people that I do respect are all getting the same messages at the same time.
Well, it's a universal message.
Well, that's so I tell people. Right. There's only one truth, no matter how you twist and turn it. Well, let's get on to the next question.
Okay.
Joseph has said that organ transplants aren't really a good idea because the person receiving the organ takes on the vibration of the donor. She said, is someone donating organs, is that a good idea?
Not from a spiritual point of view. Not from a spiritual point of view, because you infuse, first of all, your body is tailored to you. Your body is unique and is a unique vessel to hold your particular soul, your particular vibration. But not only that, but throughout your life, your body is infused by the vibrations, infused with the vibrations of your soul. So it picks up, can't help but do otherwise, it picks up all the traits of your personality. And it vibrates in harmony with your soul. Not with anybody else's soul, mm-hmm. but with your soul. So then you take something out of your body when you pass, and you put it in another person. And in doing so, you introduce not only the organ, but the personality traits that that organ is infused with, that then permeate the new host body, And you have a vibration that is at odds, that differs from the vibration of the person that you are introducing the organ into. Mm. Now, we know this on a physical level, don't we? Don't we? Because we have rejection syndrome. We have problems with new organs trying to be rejected by the host, by the body that is taking in the organs.
Right.
And that is because the body senses that those organs are not of a similar vibration. So it's a difficult equation. Mm-hmm. Yes, we want to save people. Yes, we want to prolong their lives if we can and make them healthy. But we also have to understand what we're doing at a spiritual level. Mm-hmm. And the long-term plan is, if we do things right, to educate people into not being ill in the first place. That's the key to it.
Right.
Not to chop up bits of people who have gone and stick them into people who are diseased.
Right.
But to educate people so that they understand what makes them ill in the first place and avoid acting in that manner so that they are more healthy.
Right. Well, you know, that reminds me of a conversation I had with my doctor a couple of years ago. She was insistent on me having a breast mammogram. And I told her that I would never have another breast mammogram until they can prove that it actually has any benefit, let alone the danger that it causes. And as I was walking away from her, she was yelling at me in the office to come back because she still wanted to tell, you know, offer me other ways of having a mammogram. And I just got so tired of the fact she was not hearing me that I went up to her. Michael, I stood close, probably 6 inches close to her face. So I made sure she would hear me. And I said to her, listen, sooner or later, everybody's going to die. And I'm okay with that. And if I'm supposed to die at a certain time, it will happen. And then I walked away. And I think she finally heard me. Yeah. So now if you're looking at, let's just say somebody needs a, I don't know, a kidney transplant. Are they interrupting their own exit plan from this planet by extending the physical body?
Yes, yes. And also, what has caused the problem with the kidneys in the first place?
No.
Because the body is a reflection of what is wrong with the soul. So the body will display illness, dis-ease, in areas that relate to what is troubling the soul. So you have to look at a cancer, you have to look at kidney problems, you have to look at a bad back, and you have to say, what's the source of that in the soul?
Mm-hmm.
I remember coming back from the Spiritualist National Headquarters in London many years ago, and I'd gone there to do a week of lectures, and I'd been very disappointed by what I'd seen there.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt at the time, this is long before the Joseph communications, that I wasn't being supported in what I wanted to do. I was trying to educate people, trying to make them see a different way of life, and it was a very, very difficult thing to do. And I came back, drove back 5 hours, and the next day I fell on the floor, threw a sneeze, and put out a vertebrae, which took me 6 months to sort through meditation and through an osteopath. But the point is, at that point in my life, I felt I was shouldering all the cares of the world on my back and couldn't cope with it.
Mm-hmm.
An illustration of my body showing me what was wrong with my soul.
Right.
So our illnesses are an indicator of areas that we need to look at. You know, with cancer, what is eating us? With eye disease, what is it we don't want to see? And there is always an opportunity within an illness to look for something that is a problem to us and to let it go. And if we let it go, then almost always the illness disappears too.
Absolutely.
Because we are spirits first and we are bodies second.
Mm-hmm.
And the body is the outermost communicator of what is wrong with us at the innermost point.
Absolutely. You know how many people I counsel and I tell them, you know, what you refuse to hear from your subconscious mind, your body will start to manifest to tell you this is what's going on that you're not paying attention to.
Yeah.
So, well, why wait till your body hurts? Just deal with your stuff, folks.
Yes.
We've got a really interesting question here. This is from Ray. He says, the fact that we're spiritual beings inhabiting human form for this particular experience, he says, can we also inhabit other races or alien races? I guess he means like being a Pleiadian or an Arcturian or whatever, for similar experiences. So does our soul have the capacity to experience being other beings on other worlds that are not human?
As I understand it, our soul has the capacity to be whatever it chooses to be in order to experience. We have to go back in order to answer Ray's question to what we originally were and still are at heart, which is angelic beings. And angelic beings actually exist in joy to bring experience back to the Godhead. And angelic beings do that by creating landscapes, planets, different atmospheres of creativity through which they then pass in a form of physicality in order to experience and to bring back those experiences to the Godhead. Mm-hmm. So the whole universe or universes are alive with this process going on. And that is the point of life. The point of life is in joy in normal circumstances, to experience through physicality, but not the dense physicality we have here, to move through vistas that we have created as angelic beings, to explore opportunities and potentials, and then to learn, to grow, to become more through having passed through those potentials and opportunities and experiences and take that that experience back to the Godhead, which then expands the Godhead. What applies to us here at the moment, unfortunately, are the effects of the fall, in which a certain number of souls, us, locked ourselves into this, and I always describe it as a merry-go-round ride, long ago, and need to free ourselves from this merry-go-round ride before we can move back into our angelic consciousness and then move forwards and away from this experience into other experiences, into other forms of physicality, into other forms of spirituality. But we've locked ourselves in. We've closed the door. We keep going round and round and round and coming back and back and back. And until we stop coming back and back and back,
right,
until we change this place back to what it was originally, which was a beautiful area of potential, a beautiful area that we could move through and experience, until we do that, then we've imprisoned ourselves. And the whole message, the whole Joseph message, which is a universal message, is to get us out of that state of mind, get us out of the darkness that we've locked ourselves into, so that we can go ahead and create in 1,000 worlds and on 1,000 planet surfaces and in 1,000 universes. That's our destiny, and that's what we really are. But unfortunately for us, we've forgotten that.
Mm-hmm. Or as you say in this book, and so literally too, we are hell-bent on coming back here.
Yes.
And this is hell. I guess my mother was right all those years ago when she used to say, there is no hell, this is it.
Yes, indeed.
And I guess,
you can see it every day, Maria, can't you?
Oh my God, worsening every day at the speed of light, faster than I thought it would be.
And it is a cycle, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cycle that we've gone through before as part of having locked ourselves into the effects of the fall. And what we're trying to do as light workers is break that cycle. And the only way you can break that cycle is by getting in with people and saying, look, from your core, this is what you are. Experience it for yourself. Realize that you're an angelic being. Realize that you're a creative being. Realize that you create the world that you see around you and create a different world.
Mm-hmm.
create the harmonious world that you created originally before the time of the fall. Get back to it. Do it for yourself. Do it for others. You can't do it materially. You have to do it at a spiritual level. And you've got to do it now. Or back we come, you know, those of us that are pulled back again into yet another cycle of destruction and violence.
Right. And I certainly don't want to experience this again. Michael, we're going to take once is more than enough. That's like I used to tell my kids when they were little. I said, do you know why old people die? And they would say, why? And I said, because they want to. So once around is plenty for me. Man, never come back, never come back. I repeat that to myself so many times during the day. Michael,
don't be pulled back.
No, I've informed every member of my family to scream that at me in case I'm in a coma when I go out. So, all right, let's take a short break. Michael and I will be right back.
Spiritual Professor is a name some of Maria's students and clients refer to her as. After a consultation or class with Maria, some have gone as far as calling her the Force or the Oracle. Maria is simply a woman, a mother, and grandmother who was born with a keen natural intuition. She's got a lot of life experience and she's a constant student herself. This is what qualifies her to help those who are on their journey and need some direction. Some students visit her in person, others on the phone or on Skype. Maria will work with you on your own timeline, guiding you down your best possible path. You can learn to balance the mind, body, and spirit in what seems to be a world gone mad. As David Icke says about Maria, Maria's the real deal, extremely intuitive but with her feet firmly on the ground. Out there, but down here, no bullshit. Whatever you need in this part of your journey is what Maria will help you with. She'll give you the tools you need to make the rest of your life the best of your life. See private consultations with Maria on the site at meria.net and pick the one that resonates with you. You are not alone. The professor is in at meria.net. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to The Bigger Picture with myself and Michael Rakia. Check him out. And I know a lot of people don't like the way I pronounce your last name. Did I pronounce it right, Rakia?
My father always pronounced it as Rakia.
Oh, Rakia. I like that even better. Yeah. See, here in Brooklynese, in Brooklyn Italian, I would call you Rakia, Michael Rakia. Yeah. So I guess it's all about accents and the crazy accents we picked for ourselves coming here. Okay, one of the questions I wanted to ask you, and there's a little lead up to it. Okay, one of my granddaughters is extremely gifted, and she called me about 2 weeks ago to tell me about this extremely real dream space she was in. And she basically started to describe the collapse of the field. She said it was just like she was outdoors. The energy around the planet just started coming down, crashing. Oxygen started disappearing. And she said it was extremely real. Now, she has not read any of your books, so she does not know about the field. But I always pay attention to what she gets. Do you think she was seeing the state of the field? And what is the current state of the field?
Yeah, first of all, yes, I do think she was seeing the current state of the field. It was obviously, with that heightened reality, it was a psychic dream. And we know, don't we, that the difference between normal dreaming and psychic dreaming, because there is a heightened reality to anything that is trying to educate us or tell us something or inform us or show us something. Mm-hmm. And we should always take notice of those dreams. And I think she's had a very... good illustration of what is happening and what could happen if we don't work hard, each of us, to change things. The current state of the field, we get alarm bells every so often going off from some of our guides who say, look, it's tougher for us to get through to you. In the latter stages of bringing through from here to infinity, we were informed that it was tougher to punch a hole, as it were, in the density of the field in order to allow the communication to take place, and that it took more light to do it as time went on. And I don't think it's anything to do with aging. I mean, we've been doing this now for over 10 years. But in the beginning, it was far easier to maintain the levels of energy, or for them to maintain the levels of energy during a trance session than it is now. It does seem, if you look at it with psychic eyes, to be solidifying. I think it's a very good analogy that your granddaughter had in her dream. It does seem to be becoming more of a dense field. We're talking, of course, Maria, for those of listeners who don't know, about the field of energy that we contribute to as mankind on a second-by-second basis. In other words, our view of reality. But it's a view of reality that has disconnected itself from God, again, because of the fall that happened so long ago. And as a result of that, we are running on a finite amount of energy. And we have to put God energy into the equation if we wish, literally, to save the world. That's what we're doing at the moment. We're trying to save ourselves, and we're trying to save the world. But we can only do it by putting light energy into the field, which is running on mental energy, which is running on our view of everything as being violent, as being skewed, as being finite. Our view of having to take power from every other human being, from every aspect of society, or we don't have enough, and we have to change that view. So what state are we in? Well, I always think if it was too late, and Joseph has said this, if it was too late, he wouldn't come through with the message. So there is still time to turn things around. But there is a greater urgency to turn things around than there was, say, 10 years ago. We really do need to spend part of our day bringing light into ourselves and bringing light into our world and seeing, visualizing, believing, bringing from our God center that world that we want to see manifest and have never seemed to be able to manifest because we're doing it all wrong. We're doing it from the point of view of putting a sticking plaster on the wound. We've got to get into the wound, and the wound exists on a spiritual level and not on a material one.
Well said. In rereading your book, From Here to Infinity, you talk about hastening of the end. I look at the world, and I, unfortunately, unlike you, I have to pay attention to the news. The hatred, the racism, misogyny, this group against the other group, the escalations of wars, I would think that all of that fits into the state of the field. And maybe that's why my granddaughter saw the collapse of the field.
Yes, yes, indeed. As you say, the hastening, the speed that we're going at, and the anger with which we treat everyday situations. We have a hobby business that is what puts food on the table and allows us to put out the Joseph message. And we sent out some hobby books this week, and some of them weren't franked by the post office. They went out without stamps on. And the recipients therefore had to pay a couple of pounds, a couple of GB pounds, in order to get their books. They came on to us, and of course we sorted it out with them. We sent their money, a refund, for what had happened to them. But with one exception, all those inquiries were angry. There was no acknowledgement that things do go wrong on this level.
Right.
It was as though they felt that what had happened was a personal attack on them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see this anger bubbling just below the surface with so many people. And I think a huge start to putting things right would be to say to everyone, please stop being angry. We're all in the same boat. Stop being angry. Let go of your anger and treat the people around you, as has been said before, as you would want to be treated by them. Realize that things go wrong on this level. Realize that things aren't an attack on your viewpoint, on your person, but simply part of the field. Let's start loving and respecting each other. What a great start that would be.
Right.
But you can see this anger rising to the surface in ordinary people.
Oh, I see it all the time. I see it with people that were never angry before, but they seem like they're angry all the time. You know?
Absolutely. And if you look at the internet, any comment that is posted on the internet is attacked.
Right.
Any innocent comment or any viewpoint or any review is attacked. Mm-hmm. And then the attackers start to attack each other. And so you'll see a comment on something, and then you'll see responses to that comment. And you'll see people starting to swear and threaten people, threaten each other.
Oh,
flame wars, they call them.
Mm-hmm.
But it just shows the state of humanity at the moment, where there is no, if you can't say something good, don't say something at all. Everything has to have a viewpoint, and everything has to be attacked with anger, and we need to let that go. It's eating up the world, and it's eating up our bodies as well. There's nothing that corrupts and makes us ill more quickly than anger.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've always said that anger turned inside always becomes a disease. There's no doubt about it. You're the one that's going to end up sick over it.
Yes.
You talk about in this book, and I was re-fascinated rereading it, about layers, how we are, when you're talking about time, that this is just another layer of our existence, and that time doesn't exist. And then you compare it to aging as adding more layers on the body, and why people are more weighty, which is a nice way of saying fat. And I really would like you to talk a little to that.
Okay.
You know, layers, aging, and why people are becoming so weighty.
We attach ourselves to things, don't we? We think that we are separate from the car, or the holiday, or the job, or the TV, or the settee, or the house. When in fact we make emotional attachments with them, and we expand ourselves, we expand our auras to take in those things on a spiritual level. We don't realize we're doing it, but we are so linked into materialism that we actually absorb and hook into the things that are around us. And we drag those things around with us. And we are adding layers to our existence individually and communally all the time. Now, because of the effects of the fall, we originally were angelic beings that were able to conjure up, able to create new situations, and then fold them away and eliminate them completely once we had got from those situations what we wished to experience. In other words, we could put our toys away effectively in the toy box.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the effects of the fall, we can't do that. We create. Yes, we still create. Each of us creates, whether we believe in it or not. We're creating all the time because that's what we do at our core as the angelic beings that we really are. But we can't quite put away our toys. We leave traces, layers, and we build layer upon layer upon layer of the past, as it were, layer upon layer upon layer of experience around ourselves and around the planet. We have to divest ourselves of this fascination and obsession with materialism. There is nothing wrong with us enjoying what we are allowed to enjoy, what we can enjoy on this planet.
Right.
But we have to think that we are those things. And we have to realize that one day we have to let them go. And all these pulls on the body from various material connections that we make age us, because there isn't enough energy to maintain the body correctly. The body is enveloping the car. The body is enveloping the house. The body is enveloping the TV and saying, these things are mine. And is making them mine vibrationally and is spreading out its available energy so that it can't maintain itself as it's supposed to, as an effective and perfect vehicle for the soul. So we have to look at our materialism, and we have to let things go. Enjoy them, yes, but realize that they are only tools. They are only toys, and they are only there to allow us to experience through the opportunities that they offer us by what they are being in our lives. Mm. But we can't covet them. We can't expand into them if we want to be clear-headed spiritually and if we want to be healthy.
Mm-hmm. So basically, people find themselves becoming more weighty. It's literally a physical representation of what's happening on a soul level for them.
Yes, we talked about this earlier, didn't we, in saying that the body always reflects what is wrong with the soul.
Right.
So if you want to keep everything to yourself, if you've got to have every book and every DVD and every new car and every stick of food that's in the supermarket, then your body reflects that want, reflects that trend, reflects that obsession, and says, I can't let anything out, I can't give anything away, I've got to gather it all to me. And so the body becomes weighty as a, as you quite rightly say, as a reflection of what's going on with the soul.
Mm. So, right.
The key sorry.
No, it just reminds me of Buddha's lesson on detachment. Detachment to things, detachment to the outcome, detaching from your emotion. Basically not letting those things guide your life.
Yes. Yes. And letting the simplicity of our angelic core guide our life. To say everything is as it should be within me, and therefore I manifest everything as it should be outside of me. You see, we're looking for God in all the things that we guide to ourselves. All the materialism and the having to get the latest car and the latlatest house and a bigger house and a bigger TV or whatever it is, and the new carpets and, you know, and more rooms,
right,
is a reflection, a perverted reflection of our need to connect, to reconnect to the God within. We miss God. Because of the effects of the fall at our centers, we miss God terribly, awfully, because God is what we are. We're missing that connection to the greater God. And so we seek it through our physical minds via materialism. Mm. But how often do we buy the new car and think, well, this is great, and after a week think, I need something new now? Or we buy the new outfit and we say, well, I look good in this. And after a couple of weeks we say, I need another one. You know? We buy the TV, I need a bigger one. Because nothing material can ever satisfy us as the connection with God satisfies us. And it's what we're missing.
Right.
Again, it's an expression from within. I miss God, but we twist it and pervert it through our physical minds and think that we will find happiness in material things. We never, ever can.
Hmm. Well, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like some people whose emotional needs are not being met, so they overeat. And they don't realize that they're comforting themselves through food instead of getting their emotional needs met.
Yes, yes, yes.
So it's
We move on, don't we? We have a lot of, many people move on to new partners all the time. Someone new, someone new, someone new, someone new. Because we are looking for that ultimate expression of love that is not outside of us, but is within us.
Mm-hmm.
And so an important part of the day, after we've enjoyed our material conquest, the things that we have around us, a vital part of the day is to go within and to seek out that true satisfaction that comes from connecting with God. And it's unfortunate that society moves us away from that in its thinking. It says you don't have time to meditate.
Right.
There's no reward to meditation. There's no reward to going inwards. And it will move you away in a million different ways from that time when you need to be quiet. But you need, everyone needs each day to say, this time is for me and for God. I don't care how many annoyances there are outside of myself. I'm going to disconnect the phone. I'm going to put away the tablet. I'm going to turn off the TV. I'm going to shut the door and lock it. I'm going to close the curtains. I'm going to sit and I'm going to go within. And I'm going to explore my connection to the divine. And once that connection to the divine is rekindled, then everything else falls into place. You don't eat as much. You don't need as much. You don't want as much. Because you are breathing through what you really need, which is the light of God, which is within you all the time.
Well said. I can't disagree with that. When I was reading past why people are so weighty, and I love that word, we get into procreation. Now, here in the States and around the world right now, especially with this Zika virus, with the malformed babies, everybody's talking about, you know, the church blocking people from getting an abortion, you know, women's rights here, you know, choosing whether or not to have children, forced to have children, not forced. But no one has said it quite like Joseph, that a good reason to ease back on procreation is that soul would already be entering a disadvantaged vehicle. That is unbelievable. That paragraph jumped out at me like you couldn't believe. Do you want to explain that?
Yes. We are bringing children into a world that doesn't work properly. I think before we decide that we bring more children in, we should look at our own lives. And we should say, what's my life been like? Has it been fabulous? Has it been wonderful? Has it been enlightening? Have I not suffered from pain? Have I been comfortable? Have I not had to struggle and strive to get through life? Mm. Now, what makes me think that the life that I am bringing in will be any different? So if I'm bringing in a life, I need to examine why I'm bringing in a life. Am I bringing in a life because I want that life to evolve as a soul? Or am I bringing in a life because I feel, again, with what we've been talking about, that that life will fulfill me? Now, if the answer is I'm bringing through a life because I selfishly want to fulfill me, then we have to examine whether we should really bring more children into this disadvantaged world and set them off on a life that is painful, a life that is shackled, as we talked about earlier, a life that is devoid of spirituality and the link with the divine within. Why would we put, as caring beings, any being through that? Mm-hmm. And yet that's what we're prepared to do with our children.
Right.
Many of us bring through children and we are terrified of death. What makes us think that the children we bring through will be any less terrified of death? Therefore, why would we want to bring them into that situation? Why would we want to put them through that?
I totally agree. I just tell people, I don't advise anyone have children. And I just tell them, listen, if the world's still here in 5 or 10 years, make the decision then.
Yeah.
But this is not the time. Well, Michael, I can't believe how fast this hour has gone. I'm really looking forward to talking with you again. And absolutely want to thank you so much for joining me.
It's been a great pleasure, Maria, as always. I look forward to talking again soon.
Same here, and say hi to Jane for me.
I will indeed.
Take good care of yourself. You too.
God bless.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Michael Rechia, Rechia, how did his dad say it? Rechia, I like that too. Anyway, check out his work at josephspeaks.com. I can tell you something. I recommend every one of his books because there's the answers that everybody wants to find, but they're right there. So just go in, pick out the one that calls to you and get started. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And that's not an original quote. Anyway, thanks for supporting the show. I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. always ahead of the curve, always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.